Oh, spring has sprung, and so have we. Wow. We definitely all remembered that this was happening and that daylight savings time was a thing. Yeah. I still don't understand why people get so crazy about the spring forward. I don't know if it's seasonal depression. Honestly, just go drink some juice and chill out, and I think you'll be fine. But all this little flip-flop, 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 flip, let's stop it.
Well, I mean, when we fell back, it felt like by 4 p.m. it was dark. So really, let's just move forward or fall back. Let's just stay.
You know, here's the thing. I like staying in this where we are right now. Like, I love that it's still light out at like 8 p.m. I truly, truly do. However, what I don't like is the transition. Last night, well, we're recording this on Sunday. So last night almost killed me, okay? Because we were on spring break and we were in Miami and our flight was leaving at 5. So we needed to get there at 4. And I had set my alarm to get up at 2:45. And luckily, my body woke me up at 3:15. My alarm had never went off. Because my phone was still, even though we have these smartphones and, you know, everything's supposed to be so smart, it still read it as the old 2:45. So my phone didn't ring until 3:45, which if that would have rung then, over. And there was a late. Long line within the airport too. So like something in my body was like, get up, get up. So I love this time. I really do. Like, I love the summer. You know, it's dark in the morning, but it's still light in the day, evening time. Love it. But this transition, y'all gonna have to work this out somewhere else. Because here's something that I really don't understand. Why does it start at, what, 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. and not midnight?
Yeah.
Doesn't it 2 jump to 3? Or 1 jumps to 2. It's one of those. I think it's 2 jumps to 3. Let me look it up.
It's just so, but also, please somebody fact check me, but is it true that Arizona do not observe daylight savings time?
I think it's Arizona and is it maybe Alaska? I can't, it's another one or two, maybe.
Interesting. So why are we doing this? If not everybody's doing it, then what are we doing it for?
I think what I read about it, it was mainly for farmers to be able to have more daylight. And that makes sense. And it's not like farmers disappear, but at the same time, farmers can just adjust their schedules. Like the universe or the world does not, or like, I guess the country doesn't need to shift how we operate just because of farming. But I don't know. Anyway.
I'm not in the farming sector.
What do y'all think about it, farmers? I don't know. Prove us wrong. Prove us wrong.
But what's that website called? Farmersonly.com?
That's very different here.
Anthony, I think you can get your head out of the gutter. By the way, it happens at 2. I think 2 jumps straight to 3.
Someone said something funny. They were like, why doesn't it just occur on like a Monday at like 4 p.m.? So that, you know what I mean? So that
it just get out of work.
Our work. Shut it down. Kind of love it. Well, also, March brings with us Women's History Month. Go women. Back-to-back month celebration. So we're just continuing on in this. You know, it's great to be a woman. I'm just, you know, living in feminine energy and existence. Societally, though, not great sometimes, majority of the times, right? And there's a lot of things that are still happening, you know, so enter these 2 months back to back really allow Black women to feel what it is to live in this idea of intersectionality and, you know, being not only Black but a woman and what that all brings in it. So Black women out there, hope you're doing well. Hope you're just existing and having this time to just be who you are, honestly. But also because of having this back-to-back month of celebration of Black history and also women's history, there's a lot of like social media posts too. I'm not, I guess like 2020, maybe I just haven't been paying attention to it as much before 2020, but it feels like especially after 2020, organizations are doing a lot of these, Heritage Month posts and what International Women's Day posts, whatever they want to call it. Some of them are cute, Most of them just highlight the fact that a lot of these organizations really have not done a great job with platforming, highlighting, celebrating women artists or w women of whatever fields, but specifically getting into the music field, what I've been seeing. A question I have for these organizations, do you guys like route this stuff before you post it, or you just have one person who you're like, yeah, our social media presence and our reputation is all up to you. You can just post whatever you want. Because if that is the case, I, Lauren Green, am hereby recommending that you stop it. That you stop it. Even if that person, if it's one person who you believe is competent and who would never be offensive and who would never do that, I still recommend to you to have at least two to three other people who look at it, who do this to it, and go, you know what? I get the joke you were trying to give with that, but I think because of this and other factors, maybe we do something else. Or maybe you recognize that you have no business posting in celebration of a Women's History Month, of Black History Month, because what are you actually doing? I would rather not see a post, actually. I would rather see your programming actually reflect this that you're doing, that all these little posts you're trying to say is what you're doing. Just hire more Black musicians, just hire more female musicians, just invite more female conductors, invite more Black conductors. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure why we think that social media is now the end all be all to like showing what you're doing, but it's not. And you look goofy. There's so many different examples over the weekend, but I don't know. What do y'all think? Or am I crazy for thinking that we've like it's everyone's depending on social media to show what they're doing?
Girl, I know that LA Opera thought they ate.
Oop.
I know they thought they ate.
Name
They were like,
drop.
this is about to be gold. They posted it, and everybody goes, and you
Now,
see it. I think it's still up.
if they did, they took the original post down, but if you go to shout out Catherine Needleman, her post on Facebook, you can see what the original post was, which it's very embarrassing. Basically, they were trying to make a jokey joke about how, they were trying to just put all of what women's identities and operas were to like their bodily function, specifically of menstruation. And that's insane because opera has also, in general, been historically terrible to women already. So if you were going to do anything, do something funny. Like there's been the trend going around of like, I celebrate women's rights, but I also celebrate women's wrongs. Like you could have done something funny, like with like the scenes where they go crazy and they kill everyone and whatever. You could have done something different, but here you go and do something that in no way is funny. And I think what they were trying to, there were people who were like, oh, well, they're getting defended over nothing. I think originally this post may have been on a feminist page or something. Like it was made and put in a different context when it was originally done. And but you have to recognize that you as an organization, again, who maybe historically has not represented women in a very like progressive light, when you make this joke, it's like, oh, what's funny? I'm confused. What's funny about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people use social media becomes the eyeglass, not looking at you. And I think people use that not realizing that, especially when it becomes Black History Month or Women's History Month, when for the rest of the 11th months out of that specific year, you're not really doing anything for Black people. You're really not doing anything for women, but you need something to post for this month. So then you have slim pickings. So, oh my gosh, how are we going to say that we support this even though we really don't? Okay, let me come up with this joke and then go on. Same thing with, for any of the history months. Let's talk about, yes, programming, you just got to be better at it. But also, let me see what you're doing. Are you in these communities? Are you actually going out? Are you doing what you said, going to these communities and saying, you can do this, come do this? Where are the talent development agencies for these select orchestras and organizations? Where is the actionable actions, except for when it's the month? Because usually, what I always end up being upset about is that we wait until the month, Black History Month, Women's Month, for things to finally be put into place. And then it goes dormant for the rest of the 11 months. No, I need you to stick to what you said and do what you said. And as you were saying earlier, bigger organization has to realize, ain't nothing funny.
No, it's
Don't make jokes. Because, first of all, like, this is just PR 101, but as your organization grows and you think more people are behind you, you're actually also creating a list of people that don't like you as well.
correct.
So if you're gonna post something that is funny, you're gonna have some laughs, yes. But you're going to have that other group who is ready to nitpick every single thing you got. And this would be a post where the people that don't care for you like that, they're going to run with it. And guess what? They are going to make sure everybody else hears it, and it's going to become a rapid fire. And it's not like they are wrong, because they are right. This is was a terrible post. PR team needs to be reprimanded, fired, whatever you need to do. That's between you and God. But you, bigger organization, has to realize that every eye is on you, and not every eye is for you, although you might think it is.
Now, what they should be doing, a smart organization, a thrifty, crafty organization that is trying to promote change would be, hey, we're celebrating Black History Month. Here's our concerts, our subscription concerts featuring Black composers next season. Hey, it's Women History's Month. Here's our subscription. Not our other concerts, our subscription series concerts featuring women composers that are not just the first piece. Like, and really like dive into the repertoire, see what's there, or create new things. Now, there were some good orchestra, there were some orchestras who like did some good things. They put women on the podium. Or like the first time in the, or like second or third time in the season, or they like featured, like I know the Kalamazoo Symphony featured a conductor that also played her music. Like it was like all about her kind of deal, which was really cool. But don't also make it your only time. Like you have those orchestras who are lucky, like the Atlanta Symphony, to have Natalie Stutzman like year round. Like they don't just put her on for March. But don't be the orchestra that be like, oh shit. Let's get her, put her in the first concert of March. Woo! Bullet saved. So don't do that, but like that's what I think their approach should be like. Okay, we messed up. Let's see how we can put this in our subscription concerts, which means we care because we care about subscription concerts. Less substitutes for our subscription concerts, more donors and more eyes and individuals, and that's where you should be making your change. Like I don't know if our thing is public at the Chattanooga Symphony. But I know we have a couple of initiatives next year happening with our masterwork specifically about highlighting certain composers. So whenever that comes out, I'll pop it out, you know.
What's really, this actually brings about a really major conversation though, because it's the same exact conversation we've had when it comes to like fellowships for specifically for people from marginalized communities. The fact that they are even a necessity shows that there is still an issue, right? Because in an ideal world, we would not need to have that. In an ideal world, we wouldn't necessarily need a Black History Month to make everyone pause for a second to think about the amount what Black people have brought about into this country and into the world. We wouldn't need that. if it was actually seen throughout everything within society, right? That's the whole point. It actually highlights the inequities that are present throughout most of the year, I guess, besides that month, maybe. So it's a little weird, actually, when I think about, because what if an organization doesn't post? Because we've seen that too. We've also seen critiques from people saying, oh, we see that this X, Y, and Z organization didn't post anything for Black history or for women's history and blah, blah, blah. And here's the thing. The truth is, if they didn't post anything and they don't have any history of doing it, it's kind of like, well, they're just, at least they're not faking it, right? They're like, we don't thing, therefore we're not going to show it. In that sense, I'm like, great. They're in that category of like, we just, they're acknowledging it and by not acknowledging it, right? But it's easy to see it. Mm-hmm. What I don't really necessarily understand are the organizations who know they've only ever performed a piece by a single woman composer. And they're like celebrating this one recording we have of Florence Price's symphonies. And okay, but then can you also in that same breath acknowledge the fact that this is the only piece recorded by your organization by a woman composer? And I think that's what's missing that a lot of people are seeing from, because people just post Happy International Women's Day, we have a female composer, and they think it's that. And it's like, actually, what you could do is also acknowledge the lack and what you could be doing more of. I want to see it all. I want to see what you've done. I want to see what you're currently doing. I want to see what you're saying you're going to do in the future. If you're going to like be engaged in the celebrations that are happening in the month, and also be ready for criticisms, because Anthony is 1000% right. The more and more people are looking at you, there's still going to be people who go poke, 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 poke. And you want that, right? Growth, in order to actually grow, whether or not you're an individual or as an organization, you want the people who are challenging you. You want people who are applying that pressure, asking you all the time why you're doing what you're doing, and making sure that, are you about it? Or as soon as the pressure gets hot, a certain board member who says, why are we doing these posts comes, are you going to back out then? And that ties into what Mike was saying. Put your, like, it doesn't have to be just for the month. Or I would personally rather see, oh, huh, this organization, they didn't post anything. Let me go look into them. They actually have programming throughout the entire season that highlights different groups of communities. I go, ow! I'm like, they don't have anything to prove because they're actually doing it. You know what I mean?
Something to prove. You just hit the nail on its head right there. I feel like a lot of these people post something because they feel like they're still trying to convince themselves and convince us that they're down for a cause, which I am so fine with if you did not post, because I knew you didn't actually care. I already knew that. People of color, women, anybody that's from a marginalized community, girl, we already knew you didn't like us.
Right.
So don't pull this little facade now that you're in a month and you think all eyes are you, which they are. But I know it's fraudulent. I know that it's fake. Because say I were to go apply for a job here. We want to go in a different direction. But that's not what your paper said. That's not what your announcement said. That's not what your Facebook. Remember, you said, come all black. You said. So let's actually talk about that. You were just trying to prove that you're down for a cause, because this cause happens to be finally something of importance. Black history, women's history, Hispanic Heritage Month. These are all causes that should have been in the forefront from the beginning. But in the past 3 to 6, 7 years, it's starting to become more prevalent. Now you were saying, okay, for our organization to still be progressing, we have to be down with these causes. Just like, you know, when These presidential elections happen, and all these companies, they throw their money for, you know, to the gay pride or to this. And it's just like, these companies do not care. I went to Pride last in October in Atlanta, and you would see all these organizations, you know, Pride, come get your Pride flags, come get it. And I'm sitting here like, this like, I know this organization. Y'all don't want us here. You don't. They just want your money. So
right, they want your money.
They want your money. Everything comes back to a capitalistic mindset. Money rules, money goes. So that is what you're doing. And it goes as far as these posts. You want people still in your seats. Well, here's the real thing. For the question is, who is this? Who is the audience of these posts? Is it Black people? Is it women? Is it Hispanic people? Is it Asian Pacific Islanders for their Heritage Month? Who is it? Because really what you're doing is you're trying to convince the other Caucasian people that you are of a liberal mindset. So that they feel more comfortable. Because I'll tell you, us people of color, women, girl, like I said, we already knew. We already knew. So the only people you're putting at ease is people that look like you. Because I was never at ease personally. But that just might be me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Because if you can... I don't know. Would disarm be the right word? If you can disarm people that could make a change that are in the rooms, that you are already making the change. They know where the donor money is. They know where this, that, and the other. And they're like, okay, we're still doing good. I still feel like I'm doing good work. The people who have a conscience, let's put that out there. People who have a conscience, they're like, okay, I feel good. I feel like we're doing the right thing. And then you go like actually ask the communities and they're like, I don't see nothing. What do I see for me? Like, look at, like, and here's the thing. We're going to get keep saying this. Like, you have to see who have you brought in as soloists throughout the whole year. If you're an orchestra who likes to bring in soloists, and if you're people who likes to look at soloists. Me, I'm not that person, but I respect the other people. But look at the soloists you've brought in. Look at, like, who they are, who they represent, and what communities they come from. And then look at, from your major subscription, the concerts that are close to being sold out, what is on the program? And then in your subscriptions, like the Delta, I think ASO has like a Delta series because Delta is one of the main contributors. What are on the Delta series subscriptions? So it's like, what are you frontlining and what are you throwing out there on your main stage throughout the year?
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, because you're talking about what the actual community feels is actually very important, because I think a lot of organizations fail. They want to have this, they put up their post for Black History, Hispanic Heritage, AAPI, Women's History, and they do that and they think, great, those communities now know that we are support them. No, because why would I be looking on your social media anyway? That's the whole thing. That's the issue, is it's this idea, this honestly, it's like a very pretentious mindset that these organizations have of, oh, if we post it, everyone's gonna see it. No, they won't. They don't even, I actually don't know you exist in the first place. So how in the world would they come across a post about that's supposed to be for them? Don't even know who you are.
You have not reached into their community.
And that's exactly the thing. And that's, Michael, like, that popped into my brain, because so Seattle Opera just finished up Malcolm X. It was fabulous. I got to do pre-show talks for it along with one of my friends. And what we saw every single day, every single time we went in for the pre-show talks, all the people in the lobby, I was like, this is the most Black people I have seen in the Seattle Opera at one time. And it was something that was said at the opening night party, something that I've said every single day going in and seeing who's been in the lobby every single day. And it's because it's not just because it's Malcolm X. Let me just say that as well. It's not just because this is the first ever, you know, Black like show by a Black composer that is being featured on the Seattle Opera stage. That goes into it. I think the most significant reason as to why so many of the community came out to see this, the Black community came out to see this, is because there were community events surrounding X, the opera, in all around Seattle and Washington for this. It wasn't just them saying, come to us. They were in Renton, which is a very huge Black population in Washington area, doing so many things there in Seattle at like public for free too, for free. They weren't just going and doing little events that were like, we have to pay this. No. They were going into these communities and offering free like recitals, concerts, talks, speeches, all surrounding, you know, the content and of this opera, which is Malcolm X and the legacy of activism that he has left us to continue on. And that is how you see all these Black people coming through the hall for the first time, be like, this is my first ever opera. So Seattle Opera, I'm gonna give you this for that, because, and shout out Dennis, because Dennis was the program manager who's doing all these community programs, who is a Black man himself, is the one who has been coordinating all of these visits and community events that have been happening. And I've said this to him, I'm saying it again, because you really did your thing for this. That is what I want to see. And if you go on Seattle, that's why I was checking my phone, Seattle Opera's Instagram, you'll see clips of the show and some other pictures of like opening night, and you see that through it. You see those pictures of beautiful gowns that everyone's wearing, and the people are out. Y'all were out. Mm-hmm. More of this. I don't want to just see you make a post and say, hey, Black people, we're doing something on Malcolm X. Come on over. Jeez. Come on over. Like, go actually be engaged in the community. Talk to them. Get to know what they actually want to see and understand what is actually going on in their own communities. There is more work to be done. And y'all are, honestly, it's giving lazy. When I just see a post that is very Canva, shout out Canva. I'm not shading Canva at all. But when I see a very Canva-ish post on a multi-million-dollar budgeted organization's social media, just saying, happy Black History Month. That's it.
They said we whipped this up last night in Canva.
Uh-huh. It did.
The first of the month, first of the shortest month, we got to do something.
So I just want to real quick, little research. Someone's premium subscription series. Yeah. Period. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 concerts. On these 6 concerts, we have 1 African-American soloist, piano. We have your name composed. Like the very first concert, you have Tchaikovsky, and Maslov. The second concert is Perry, which is someone who's a little different, Rachmaninoff and Prokofiev. Third concert, Mozart and Bruckner. Fourth, Tchaikovsky. Can't pronounce that, Tchaikovsky. The fifth one, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Schumann. The last one, Jonathan Linshoff and Stravinsky.
Who is this?
I'm just putting it out there. That is their premium subscription series.
Gagged.
You get
your Tchaikovsky's and your Prokofiev's, and for your classical junkies, they're like, oh, I'm gonna go see that. Now, what you could do is tie in more of what your passion is. If it is new music, it is diversity, like all these statements were. Because I'm even looking at the people who are on this like poster, and I see white, African American, Latin American, white. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, four men, two women. Premium subscription series. So I'm just saying, like, that is where the work comes in. If you are an Exxon orchestra, which I'm getting in my game about orchestra backs. If you're an Exxon orchestra, you got to do better by your premium series. If you're a Ropa orchestra, I know you have a limited masterworks where you can afford stuff. You have to have an initiative every year. And for the people out there, my understanding, Exxon is like full-time benefits, X amount a week. Ropa is your regional orchestras. Cool. So like those are the two initiatives that should be happening. Your premium should get change every single year and feature, of course, your standards because you need to get people in the door. But also that's where you can change people's minds of what is new orchestral rep or new soloist. And then your masterworks, if you have six, have an initiative per year. And that's how you change what's happening. And don't on your little rehearsal programs, your little, okay, we're going to rehearse this, 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 that, and the other. Don't put that extra piece first for 15 minutes. And it sounds like doo-doo, booty cheeks, bad. Because you only did it for 15 minutes. Because you know your orchestra ain't going to look at it until they get there. And they're going to be like, what is this rhythm? I can't feel this. Well, baby, no, you can't. It ain't Tchaikovsky. It ain't Prokofiev.
The I can't feel this is so real. So real.
Yes.
I will give this orchestra one credit. Just one. On one of these, it took me a minute. On one of the, they did have a Carlos Simon concert. They did have Henry Dorn on one of their programs.
Oh, I know who this is.
So, you know.
When you said Henry's name, I knew. Yep. Mm-hmm.
What is it? I'm saying. Now, let me go look up. Now, y'all talk real quick. I'll go find another on the opposite coast.
Okay. You said something. I'm trying to bring it back what it was going through this. Oh, yeah. How long do these organizations think that their current subscription goers live? Because I feel as, you know, I'm being serious because it feels like we're a little out of touch with reality of where the majority, the median, let's say, of your subscription goers, how old they are. And this is no shade. This is science, okay? Science hat on. If majority of your goers now are between the ages of like 55 and 80, and you're not doing anything within your marketing or programming or anything that is inclusive to the generations that are in their now 30s, 20s, and below, who you think are going to be your future concert goers, patrons, donors, board members, why would we do that? Why would I do that? Why would I spend my money, give my time, volunteer my time to an organization that has programming like that? So I need you all to wake up for a moment. And I need you to also recognize that if you want to say, well, there's always going to be people who are more conservative mindset. Yeah. And they're the ones who are defunding the arts. So who are you fighting? Realize who you actually are fighting against and who you should be paying more attention to, because it's not the ones who you think are going to continue giving you the money. And they're, whoever is inheriting that money, have no interest in what their parents are doing or have done with their money in the past. They will put it in towards places and people who are more aligned with what their vision is. And I promise you, 75 more probably percentage of that does not involve giving to a symphony orchestra, mm-hmm, or institutions who support have the arts in general. Because why would they? Mm-hmm.
You know, but one of the biggest business models is when people turn their outlook to a younger audience. Mm. Because then you're training up the younger audience for them to continue going through their lifespan. Because once you only focus on the elder, the more conservative viewpoint, Yeah, that runs out. And I'm sorry, these people are not saying, oh, I'm on my deathbed, you have to continue giving your money to the arts. That's not going to happen. Sometimes they do, but very rare. Mm-hmm. So you might want to stop spending all of your time trying to go to these older generations. Why not just cultivate an audience that is younger, who has more time to actually benefit the program itself, that is willing to be a part of the organization as an audience member, as a donor, as this, as all of these little things. There is something to tap into. Also, that means you're going to have to up what you play and the way you think about going out into communities. Because for so long, a simple Facebook post or something in a newspaper would work for older generations. That does not work. That does not work for today's. It doesn't.
No, it does not. So back in for research. Another big subscription. This is the most expensive subscription for this orchestra. This is a big time orchestra. This is 7 concerts. We have Hisaishi with his own pieces, which is an Asian American composer. Yeah, and Japanese. He leads them. What do you say? Japanese?
Yeah.
Thank you, because I don't know this man.
We saw those movies like My Neighbor Totoro and such from that film studio. Bit.
Cute. So he's doing some of his own pieces and then leading pictures. Then you have Beethoven, Tchaikovsky. And then you have Schubert, Strauss, and Sarajevo. I think I said that right. And then you have Mahler. Then you have Mahler and Alma Mahler. And then you have a concert that has yet to be programmed. And then you have Boulez and Debussy. Out of all this, not one single African-American female or man piece or soloist. You do have one female soloist. Then you have Hisaishi doing his own music and leading the orchestra. This is at minimum $322 for 7 concerts. So a little bit better than the last one. But this is for next year. This is not this past year. This is for next year. They thought through this already. And there's one female soloist. I forgot to mention that. One female soloist.
No, you said that. It's still depressing.
I did. Okay, great. So that's 7 concerts. 7. And this, if I said this orchestra, you would be shocked. Because you'd be like, I thought they were progressive.
Ooh.
I actually would not be shocked. I am shocked when you give me a program that's very diverse. I'm never shocked when, because that is the norm. So no, they're not. As I said earlier, these organizations, they do not care. As people of color, marginalized people, we know what's up. I am shocked when an organization gives me something that is of value to me. That's what I'm shocked. I'm like, oh, in a minute. You own something here. Mm-hmm. I'm never shocked when it's something like that. That's the status quo.
You know what? Yeah, absolutely. It for me, it does make me go, oh, okay, we're still doing this. It's not, you're absolutely right. It's not surprising. Sometimes it can be shocking though, just because I'm like, oh, we're still doing this. And the more and more, especially go look at your local symphonies right now, because most of them have put out their 24-25 seasons, and just go like look at how it feels to look at who they're bringing in composer wise, conductor wise, soloist wise, and also go check out who their current roster of musicians are. And also think about, does this reflect my community? Because everyone's community is different, right? And that's the beauty of it, especially in America, that's supposed to be the melting pot of the world, you know what I mean? Like, every community is different. So it should feel as if symphony orchestras or any arts organizations and institutions should be very different from each other because they're all in different communities. But when you see that most of them are very similar, no matter where they are in the world and who they hire, who you see on stage and the programming, that is an issue. That's a huge issue.
And then my last one, leading off of that, this is another huge orchestra, big time conductor, big time orchestra, like huge in the histories of orchestras. This is just one page of their subscription. They have Piazzolla, Vivaldi, and Mozart with a female conductor. Amen. Then they have View Temps, violin concerto. I can't pronounce this poem. And then Brahms, Mozart and Orff, Britten, Shostakovich, Beethoven, Beethoven, Debussy, and Prokofiev. Out of this page, by the way, only two female conductors, so better than the last one, but all the soloists are men.
Like I said, I'm not shocked. This does not, this absolutely, for me, duh, this is what it is. That's why I am not the orchestra person. That's why I truly do not, that medium of music, it never spoke to me because it never came to me. It was as if I was never allowed to be there in the first place. So.
And if you are involved in that world, as am I, what I would say is recognize that this is still happening. And you always have to, you know, gut check yourself every now and then when you're involved with people and organizations, and you're like, all right, do I feel like I can do things in this space to actually change? Do I feel like it's part of what I want to do in order to do this, right? There's a certain level of engagement, because there are people like Black Orchestral Network who are doing the good fight, and they are out here, you know, advocating for, sending out calls, and those are major people who are involved within that network. And so it can be very, very tiring work to feel like you are at the top of your field and you're still having to pull extra and do even more work than your other colleagues who just get to exist. And I really thank Black Orchestral Network and the work they're doing, because they should be thriving and just living their lives, doing their careers. But instead, they also now have to advocate on the behalf of not only themselves, but colleagues who haven't even made it into the field yet because of all the issues that are currently going on. We have seen success stories come out of the orchestral realm for Black composers and composers of other marginalized communities, but at a significantly slower rate than it should be. And it can be very challenging and very sad at times. And unfortunately, the truth behind it is it's classical music, especially the symphony orchestra, is starting to lose its grip on its relevancy within society. We've already been seeing it. Go look at the numbers. And they're also being critiqued more. Mm-hmm. Anthony, that face, what was it?
When you said it's starting, I feel like it's been a long time since an orchestra has been relative.
Yeah.
To the culture, to the body, to, I mean, one can argue, what, since maybe the 60s, 70s, 80s? Because to turn 90s and definitely turn the century.
Right. And I think that what 2020 specifically has done for us, which it was a lot, right? But what also it highlighted, it gave us an opportunity to look at what really was no longer a necessity. Because before then, before 2020, it wasn't as bad as it is now. And I think what we're seeing now is a fact that so many places have, and this is not even just for the classical realm, but also other industries too, who there's less and less funding coming because they're not seen as much of a necessity, or even a need, a desire to want, like, why would I want to go? I don't even want to anymore. So I think symphonies are being presented with an opportunity to either stay where they are, because a lot of them are scared. They're scared if they change too much that they're gonna lose their older donors who want to see the Schuberts, the Beethovens, the Bachs, Brahms. Yes, we already know. We know you're afraid. That is no excuse. there is a way to go about change in a way that you stand on what you believe. First of all, you have to think about what you believe in. Because the biggest thing I have found as well is organizations don't even know what they believe in. You have your mission statements, you have your values, you have all of that. But the core of what you believe in can be shown in who you hire and what you present on stage. So majority of you are not even in the conversation. But you're afraid, you're trying to do these little initiatives and you're failing at them because you're just trying to say and show the things you've done with actually not engaging with these communities, as we've been saying. So we're in this moment, right? If you go look on New York Times, there was just an article that came out about why do American orchestras not hire so many American conductors? We know why. It's based on a European model. Therefore, they want to have these European conductors come in, majority European conductors, right? Dudamel is our one only like Venezuelan conductor who we have, who's like an actual rock star. The rest of them are European. And very few American ones. Bernstein was, you know, the pivotal American orchestral conductor. And that's why he's so major and people know about him because he was American. We don't have symphony orchestras, especially American symphony orchestras, lack identity and lack what their truth, what your values actually are. And that is why you are stumbling. You are just grasping at something that you're not even sure what it is. So maybe take a moment, take a breath, and get people in the room who are actually having these conversations, because you're just trying to hire people who just do the work actually is not good for you. It may feel that way. You may just want someone to come in and make a quirky little social media post for like International Women's Day. And then this happens. Anyway, I digress. I digress because I'm tired. But at the same time, I am okay with pushing it forward because I want the people who want to have careers in this field to have a career in this field, because they do deserve to have a career in this field. Especially I'm speaking to Black people, women, I'm speaking to y'all. I'm also speaking to other communities from marginalized communities. I'm speaking to y'all because you deserve to have a career in the field you want to. We have to reshape it though. But also organizations, you have to hire people to make this reshaping happen.
Simple.
Or die.
Or that.
Easy. It's fine. If you want that, just go away. That's okay.
So I hope you listen to this and you know that you can inspire change. Keeping your heel around some of these organizations next. Mm-hmm. Every time. As Lauren said earlier, you need people like that around for you to progress. You have to have someone to challenge you. So in each of our communities, whether you're in Atlanta, you're in LA, you're in New York, you're in Seattle, if we continue to hold these organizations of like, you're not doing enough to represent all of us, they have no leeway but to change. So I hope that you continue to inspire and help that change come to fruition. So thank you for listening to another great episode of Road to Pitch, and continue listening to the rest of the things we have coming up for the rest of the season. See you next week. Bye.